thank you very much. Welcome to you all from wherever you appear in the world. And in Africa, you can be assured that we're pretty warm wherever we are from. Today we have four outstanding speakers. They are all senior experienced lawyers in the practice of family law. I do not intend to read their bios. They are available on the IAFL website where you all logged on, and I don't want to waste time. We have Effie Ifoza from Nigeria, who is an fellow of the IAFL. We have Professor Weshel Domingo from South Africa, who is also on the South African Law Reform Commission. We have Priska Chugera from Tanzania, who is an advocate. And we have Kahina Bougache, I hope I pronounced it correctly, who is from Algeria. So we will have an overview of the status and consequences of customary marriage, religious marriage, and same-sex marriage in those jurisdictions. Thank you so much for joining us. And Effie, if you would start.
Thank you very much, and I'm glad to be here. And thanks, Rachel, for bringing me into IA, to the academy. Generally, in Nigeria, well, I'm just going to give a brief outline because of time about the marriages in Nigeria, the consequences, and then status and consequences. In Nigeria, generally, marriage is regarded as a sacred institution, which is generously guarded by law. And we have two forms of marriages, the statutory marriage, and then the customary marriage or the religious marriage. All marriages celebrated in conformity with the Marriage Act are referred to the statutory marriages. A statutory marriage, if I just go in straight there now, it's monogamous in nature. It recognizes one man and one wife to the exclusion of all others, and is primarily regulated by the Marriage Act. And then the customary marriage, it's actually recognized by the Marriage Act. Because I'll just read an aspect of the Marriage Act. It says no marriage in Nigeria shall be valid where either of the parties thereto at the time of celebration of a marriage is married under customary law to another person other than the person to whom the statutory marriage is had. The consequence of this is that even if you were married under customary law, because the law recognizes a customary marriage, it's a legal marriage in Nigeria, you cannot marry any other person under the act. You can only marry the same person or the first person. Let me put it, the first person, since a customary marriage is is polygamous in nature, only the first person you married under customary law can you go and marry under the act. You cannot marry another person under the act. It's not legal. In Nigeria, we have over 250 ethnic groups with very diverse cultural practice regarding marriage. But in all, I believe all ethnic groups, the customary marriage is predominantly polygamous in nature. Religious marriages in Nigeria are also considered as customary marriages. You know, like the Islamic marriage, it's also polygamous in nature. Marriage according to Christian ethics, it's synonymous with a statutory marriage, that is, it's monogamous. There's also, if the marriage is conducted, but this, it's only kind of referred to, it's only, it falls under the statutory marriage if it is conducted in a manner set out under the Marriage Act. And that's if it's done in a place registered for that purpose, that the church must be registered for that purpose, or by a licensed practitioner. So it's not being married in any church does not guarantee that you've conducted a statutory marriage or a common law marriage. You know, there are provisions that would make that so, or make it a statutory marriage, that's a circuit and all, and the licensing. So to further strengthen the synergy between the church married and the statutory marriage, most churches are now licensed to conduct statutory marriages. And any marriage not conducted in conformity with the act is deemed to be a customary marriage. What we've added is with a statutory marriage, being monogamous in nature, it also affords certain protections which you don't have in the customary marriage. And then even being the president now of the African Women Lawyers Association, we deal with a lot of fallouts from these customary marriages and the vices of the customary marriages. Consequences of customary marriages is that it recognizes polygamy. And the issues such as divorce and custody of children of this marriage, it's not setting because it will be decided in accordance with the custom of the particular couple. And in most cases, it's usually unfavorable to women. Divorce, for example, is usually carried out by the woman having to return the bride price. And then we have to take into consideration that the bride price was not even given to the woman in the first instance or at the first instance. And then under the Sharia law or the Islamic marriage and the Malik school, you have where the man can just talak the woman. And that's by telling her, I divorce you. And then by the third time, he says that they are considered as having been divorced. But the woman cannot do the same, I believe. I'm not an expert on Sharia law, but I'm told, or I'm made to understand that she would have to go to the Sharia court to get divorced. Under customary law, you know, for any flimsy reason, the woman could be returned maybe to her parents' house or to her family home, you know, And then under part of the consequences too, a negative consequence of customary marriage is that women generally are not entitled to settlement. So alimony is strange to customary law. There's no transfer of property or maintenance for the woman. Maybe, just maybe she can get maintenance for the children. I believe now the courts, especially the customary court or the magistrate court, the customary court, now can grant divorce for customary marriages, and then they can give maintenance to the children. You know, here we must remember that in Nigeria, and I believe most African cultures, the children are considered to be property of the men or of their fathers. So, but with the Child Rights Act now, which has been domesticated by so many states in Nigeria, I think a lot of protection is being given to the children's needs have been taken into consideration when the issue of custody comes up. Like say, inheritance rights are determined by custom. In most cases, this inherits women. Women are usually considered properties of their husband's family. I remember there's this famous case, it's now a case of Obuze and Obuze, which I fortunately was involved in right from the lower court all the way to the Supreme Court. Unfortunately, we got judgment on behalf of the woman. And you'll be amazed, this day and age, in their claim or in the petition, children. Yeah, you know, in the court processes, we were shocked to see that the man's family or his children referred to the woman, our client, as a mere chattel. You know, said it was a mere chattel of the family. So these are consequences of traditional marriages, which, so many human rights groups and all are just trying to eradicate. And we hope we do better. But statutory marriage, like we've said, is the union of one man and one woman to the exclusion of others. Inheritance is according to the rules of testacy, where there's a will, and the rules of intestacy, where there's no will. But in Nigeria, we have what we call the double-decker marriages, where a marriage, you can have two wedding or marriage ceremonies. You have one under the statutory law or under the, and then under the customary law or vice versa. This brings into question, if in the instance of a divorce, which is predominant, we have two schools of thought there. I don't know if I would have time to go in, but to talk about there's the coexistence group or the one where it says one subsumes the other. But we have people doing, go for the customary law, and then after that, you go just to make sure you're well, as we say, you're well covered in either direction. Then coming to the same-sex marriage or gay marriage is illegal in Nigeria and has been criminalized. We have the Same-Sex Marriage Act, or Prohibition Act of 2015. Nigeria came with it and got a lot of flack from the international community for Nigeria. Criminalization of extends beyond the celebrants or the couple to even the ministers and then the attendees of the ceremony, at the ceremony. I think part of the rationale is that it does not conform with the, should I say, the moral or the customary, the traditional or their values, the traditional values of the majority of Nigerians. If I can highlight some of the Same-Sex Marriage Prohibition Act, it says then, it criminalizes all forms of same-sex association. Even the public show of amorous relationships are criminalized. And it criminalizes registration and operation or participation in gay clubs, societies, and organizations. And then criminalizes the solemnization and witnessing of same-sex marriages. We've had, I believe it hasn't really fully been tested in court, but I believe there's a matter tried, someone tried to test it in court, but he was told he really had no locus because he did not say he was gay. And that the society, the gay society.
Effie, I'm going to have to stop you.
Was thrown out. I also know about, okay. Well, that's it really.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was most interesting. And if I can ask, Weshal Domingo, please, to take us to South Africa.
So greetings, everyone. Susan, can everyone hear me? Am I okay? So I'm going to go. Great, thank you. I'm a commissioner for the South African Law Reform Commission. So what I'm going to chat today about is our proposal of the adoption of what is called a single marriage statute in South Africa. And so I think it's important just to give you context of the recognition of the different types of marriages that take place in South Africa. So historically, we've always had what is called the Marriage Act, which is one man, one woman, to the exclusion of all others. There was not the recognition of polygynous or same-sex marriages. So that's the one, so it's the Marriage Act. After the end of apartheid, there was the call for the recognition of religious marriages, of same-sex marriages and customary marriages. So what we have now is we have another bill, which is called the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, and that recognizes marriages, customary marriages in South Africa where parties are in practicing indigenous customary law in South Africa. We then have a third type of marriage that can take place under what is called the Civil Union Act. So the Civil Union Act provides for the recognition of same-sex marriages, but also the Act allows for parties to enter into heterosexual parties to enter into what is called a civil union marriage or civil union. So in a nutshell, what we have right now is we have these different pieces of legislation. We have three customary marriages, we have the civil union, and then we have the Marriage Act. We were then mandated, the commission was mandated by the Minister of Home Affairs, requested us to investigate the adoption of a single marriage statute. And the reason for that was that registration of these marriages were not taking place at Home Affairs, women were left destitute, and then we have religious marriages, and also I want to bring in here domestic partnerships, life partnerships not being recognized. We as a commission, we investigate a matter, we then have an issue paper which is given out, and then a discussion paper. We are at the phase of the discussion paper in which we then attach a bill. So when we went out, there was not much support for either a single or an omnibus statute. And when I'm speaking in an omnibus statute, yeah, I'm talking about having all the different types of marriages in one bill. The commission then thought the most important thing, and as our mandate was requested from Home Affairs in terms of registration, that what we would have is a unified single statute that would recognize relationships. And here we have in our discussion paper the option of the recognition of two bills. The one is called the Protected Relationships Bill, and the other one is called the Recognition and Registration of Marriages and Life Partnerships Bill. And the reason why we have two names for essentially the same bill is that many people felt that the sanctity of marriage should be protected, and the bill should actually mention marriage and distinguish that from what is called life partnerships. Participants and people and stakeholders felt that it should simply be protected relationships, because what do we want to do? We want to protect all relationships regardless of whether you are married or in a life partnership. And so I think that is good for context. This particular bill does not deal with the notice of intention to marry. It does not deal with the matrimonial or the patrimonial consequences of marriage. It does not deal with spousal support and maintenance, and it does not deal with dispute resolution or divorce. So in other words, the focus of the single marriage statute is the registration and the solemnization, so that is actually entering that marriage with the marriage officer. That is what this bill focuses on. So the consequences of the marriage, as I said, spousal maintenance, matrimonial property, all of that is dealt with in other legislation in terms of South African law. However, all of the other legislation would have to be amended, because what this bill is calling for is the recognition and registration of domestic partnerships or life partnerships, as well as religious marriages. And so this is huge for South Africa right now. And there's been much debate around this. So what does the bill do? What does it want to do? It wants to provide for recognition of, as I said, marriages, life partnerships entered into parties by parties regardless of religious, cultural, or any other beliefs. So the manner in which that relationship was entered into does not matter. Doesn't matter what culture you come from, doesn't matter whether it's a same-sex union or not, or heterosexual parties, whether it's monogamous or polygynous, doesn't matter. What we want to do is provide for the recognition and protection of parties that enter into a protected relationship. It is there to provide for the requirements for entering into that relationship. It is also providing for the consequences of entering into that relationship. And so what this bill specifically does is it says all other legislation would then have to be amended to provide for legal consequences and protection for people that would register under the bill. So this preamble of our bill gives reference to the Constitution of South Africa, but the preamble particularly notes that we've had the recognition of what we would say fragmented recognition of marriages. And what we want to do is we want to say that all legislative benefits, all legal benefits should be extended to all relationships worthy of protection, to ensure a fair outcome to the parties when a dispute arises. It also further notes that there has been huge debate, case law, and a bill around the recognition of Muslim marriages in South Africa. And so we were mandated to look at that particularly as well. And then also to look at the states, our state's international obligations to take appropriate and reasonable measures to eradicate discrimination against women in relationships, and particularly to prevent child marriages in South Africa. So the objects of the relation of the legislation is to rationalize the marriage laws pertaining to relationships. It looks at validity requirements, and ultimately it is to provide recognition. Now, one of the things about this particular bill is we're saying that no one can opt out of this bill. So we propose parties in a protected relationship cannot exclude the application of legislation. And the question here really arises whether we are correct in assuming that women or the weaker party in a relationship would necessarily want the relationship to have legal consequences. So that would trigger duty of support. And what our thinking is that there may be women that says, well, I'm in a life partnership. I actually don't want legal consequences attached to this. And what this bill will do is it will attach legal consequences to that. When we're looking, so I said earlier on that it's both monogamous and polygynous marriages that are recognized. Here, when we're looking at a monogamous protected relationship, that would be a relationship regardless of sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, that's all included. So what we are trying to do is to protect all types of relationships. One of the big things that we're doing, and we're changing our legislation, is saying that all parties must be 18 years of age on the date of entering into that type of relationship. Now, before our Marriage Act, you could get an application, make an application to the minister, and you could get a minor applying to the courts and getting permission from parents to enter into that marriage. So one of the big things we're saying now to South Africans is no marriage will be allowed below the age of 18. And that's to prevent child marriage. It's also to prevent parents forcing young people into marriage. We also have what is called in South Africa, ukutwala, where sometimes a young girl is almost kidnapped, taken from her family and put into a marriage. We're also saying where a young girl has fallen pregnant and she's 15 years old, she will still not allowed to be married. And this also complies with South Africa's obligations in terms of its international obligations around that. So in a nutshell, what this bill does is it regulates the marriage. So it's saying we're going to appoint marriage officers. Those marriage officers will come from all sectors of the communities. If you could get a Khoisan, and so that's a particular tribe in South Africa, the chief or traditional leader there can be a marriage officer. However, the marriage would still have to be registered with Home Affairs. It has to be done in the presence of two competent witnesses. We're also saying in this bill that a proxy marriage could take place. So in South Africa, what often happens in Muslim marriages is that a guardian would go to the mosque and enter into that marriage on behalf of the bride. That is allowed, but it's regulated now. One of the big things in this this bill is that anyone who's in a polygynous marriage would have to get their consent of a wife or wives should they wish to enter into a future relationship. Now, the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act is silent right now on that. So this is a huge development. So it's saying to men, you want to enter into another relationship, you're going to have to tell the other wives. And one of the big things that we've been dealing with in South Africa is when the husband dies, you have multiple wives who goes, well, I'm supposed to inherit because I'm married to him, and finds out there's another two wives that your husband was married in. So what we're trying to do is to regulate that in terms of registration. I think then there's also issues around capacity to understand the legal consequences of marriage. As I said, the Minister of Home Affairs can designate religious leaders to do that. One of the other things that we're also dealing with here is in this bill is that we're saying failure to register the marriage does not lead to the invalidity of the marriage. In South Africa, couples, we know that we have people who's living in a rural area, who's married, comes to an urban area, then is in a life partnership with someone, has moved in with a woman. The woman in the rural area who's married gets the protection, but the person who's in that life partnership may not be protected. And what we're saying here, if registration does not take place, you would have the opportunity to go to court and say, yes, there's been a failure to register, but I am still married and I'm going to provide the proof around that particular marriage. So registration then would be prima facie proof of the existence of a protected relationship. And as far as possible, what we are trying to say is that if we can have the protection of all types of relationships, which includes domestic partnerships, we will then not have the cases that we are dealing with presently now, where these parties do not have legal protection. You have parties who are in religious marriages married for 40 years, and a divorce takes place. The woman is kicked out on the street. She has no legal protection at all. One of the things that we also thought about that may be introduced is premarital counseling and education, but that is something that we as the South African Law Reform Commission would have to look at with the Social Welfare Department. So Susan, in a nutshell, that is the proposal right now, and I look forward to the comments that will come from you. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for keeping to the time. And may I now ask Prisca to tell us about Tanzania.
Thank you very much, Susan. Greetings to you all. As I've been introduced, I'm from Tanzania. It's my great honor to be part of this panel. And I'll be highlighting some few issues which are pertaining to marriage and their consequences in Tanzania. To start with, when it comes to marriage, in Tanzania, it's governed by the law. However, traditions, customs, and religions, they play a very great role, and they determine how, what type of marriage is celebrated and how is it going to be conducted during its subsistence, as well as how it's going to be determined. Also issues of divorce and also issues of division of matrimonial assets are really influenced highly by the customs and the religion as well. So to start with, when it comes to marriage, there are two main burning issues which have also arose international community concern. The first one is the minimum age of contracting marriage rather. And also the second one is the endorsement of the polygamy practice in the statute. Starting with the minimum age, to date in our law, it's provided in the Law of Marriage Act that minimum age for a person to the minimum age which a person can get married, for a girl it's 15 years and for a boy it's 18 years. And also it goes further to provide that if the parties are even are younger than the provided age, they're even 14 years, they can seek for leave to get married in court. The emphasis is on the consent. There is a requirement for parental consent for the ones who are getting married under age, but still this has been viewed as discriminatory. Because in 2016, an activist brought a case in the High Court of Tanzania challenging the provisions of the law of marriage. It was viewed that the provisions are discriminatory, they're infringing the right of the girl child, right to education, also their freedom of information and also expression. The court granted the prayers, and it affirmed that the provision of that law really infringed the provision of the Constitution. But then again, the Attorney General appealed against that decision, and in appeal, the Court of Appeal confirmed again. And in the High Court decision, they were given 1 year. The state was given 1 year to rectify and amend that legislation. But it's unfortunate until now that amendment hasn't been effected. So it's still the same position. Young girls can still be married as young as 15. But when it comes to the polygamous practice, it has been noted in the international community that, and it has been condemned for it to be actually violating women's rights. Even the UN Human Rights Committee has noted it in its general comment number 28, that it violates the dignity of women, it's inadmissible and discriminatory against women. And they were advocating for it to be abolished wherever it is practiced. But in Tanzania, the practice is wide. As I've noted before, due to customs and religion, there's a lot of many number of people who are in polygamous marriages, in as much as it is condemned. So in as much as it's viewed as it creates inequality, but still our law has a gap in it, because for the women who are in polygamous marriages, upon dissolution of the same marriage, their rights are not fully protected. So they are left vulnerable, because the law only allows petition for divorce for, like, there should be one person petitioning for divorce. There can't be two person petitioning for the same divorce. So when it comes to division of matrimonial assets, the person who is in court has a chance of getting a bigger share without consideration of the other parties who are left at home. Yes, so that's a challenge which is still continuing, and it's a gap in our current statute. But under normal circumstances, a normal marriage in Tanzania is defined to be a voluntary union between a woman and a man. So the same-sex marriages are not recognized as well here, and they are criminalized as well, as the way it has been stated by Council FFA in Nigeria. So ordinarily, if a couple wants to contract a marriage, they'll choose their own platform, either it's a church or it's a civil union. But of interest is there is a requirement of issuing a notice of intention to marry, which is required to be issued at least 21 days before the date of celebrating the marriage. And for the ones who are not locals, they are also required to produce a certificate of non-impediment, that they were never married before, or if they are divorced, they should present a certificate of divorce, or they should present a death certificate if someone is widowed. So that's the in normal circumstances. However, the 21 days requirement for notice of intention to marry can be waived by making an application for special marriage license. So this one, it's a separate application which can be paid for, and then a waiver can be obtained, and the parties can get married at their soonest. When it comes to divorce in Tanzania, the petitioner is required to actually prove that the marriage has broken down. And not only broken down, they have to satisfy the court that the breakdown is actually irreparable. So it's not just the fact that if a person is, maybe they have fallen out of love alone, that is not sufficient. So they have to prove that the marriage has broken down irreparably. And also for a couple who have been married less than 2 years, they cannot petition for divorce automatically, or they'll have to seek for leave of the court to petition if they want to petition for divorce under 2 years of marriage. In deciding whether the marriage has broken down, the court has been looking on several factors, but the evidence which ought to be presented is either there is adultery, or the sexual perversion, or there is cruelty, neglect or desertion, or if there is mental illness, or the respondent has been imprisoned. So there have to be some concrete reason to present before the court that the marriage has broken down irreparably. Also, when it comes to the division of matrimonial property, there is also a provision of the customs of the parties has to be taken into consideration. And I think as it has already been pointed out, in most of the African countries, we are patrilineal, so the customs are not really favorable to women. So most of the time, if the customs are being relied on, or if it's an Islamic marriage, then women might not be favored in that division. But when it comes to issues of spouse maintenance, it's not automatic in our law. It's already provided in the law that the court has to consider the circumstance in which to allow the spouse to be given allowance. As I've indicated earlier, same-sex relationship are not are criminalized in Tanzania, and it's provided in the Penal Code. It prohibits same-sex relationship. Therefore, the union is not recognized either. And for the ones who are charged, it's punishable. The penalty is 30 years imprisonment, and in other incidents, to life. And also for offenses like gross indecency, it's also punishable for 5 years. Therefore, this has created a lot of challenges, because even the NGOs which are working in areas of sexual and gender diversity, they're having challenges to actually operate in Tanzania. They are facing legal barriers in registration as well as the operations. So I think, Susan, let me end here. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Priska. It's most interesting. And if I can now call on Kahina from Algeria.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Esther, for the invite, and greetings, everybody. When I was asked to speak about this very important subject, I would like, first of all, to start and asking the audience to bear with me for a little while, because I will try to explain or grasp the spirit of the law, or should I say the clear dichotomy between in the Algerian law when it comes to women, status in the family versus the society. So while we look into the constitution that clearly says that all citizens are equal before the law, there is no discrimination shall prevail because of race, birth, sex, opinion, or any other social condition or circumstances, it's clear that the sixth discrimination in the marital status law renders women and girls subordinate to many aspects of family relation before, during, and even after the marriage. In fact, the real battleground over status and rights of women have been the family code, which set the goals and the provision regulating the marriage, but also the family. Debate between those who wants, first of all, either a family life organized along Western secular lines, or those who favored a family structure confronting or maybe conforming to the influence and Islamic principles. Well, it's all started right after the independence in 1962, where the code was proposed, discussed, and then shelved for at least two decades of a period. And then it's been adopted in 1984. So before 1984, the families were regulated by the civil code. Well, in one instance in 1981, the code provision that were proposed before the adoption really create a vehement reaction and opposed from a different female, whether members of the parliament and female activists and demonstration led in the streets. Although the 1984 provisions are more liberal than those in 81 version, the code essentially reflects the influence of Islamist conservatism, under which the family unit is the basic unit of society. The head of the family remains the husband and the wife, to whom the wife owes obedience. So according to this basic conservative Islam and the Sharia law, according to which a Muslim woman may not marry a non-Muslim, the polygamy is allowed and permitted under certain condition, although they are very rarely practiced. And women do not inherit property equally to the man, and women cannot be married without her consent. And she may sue for divorce in very specific circumstances, including desertion or non-support. And custody of children under the age of 7 goes to the case of divorce, passes to the wife, but reverses to the father at later stage. While the divorce rates are risen, but the divorce remain much easier for man versus woman under the current code. Marriage is defined, if you look at it, it's really defined as a legal contract between men and women. And in fact, the legal age for marriage is 19 years old. The judge, however, can in very specific cases issue a permission to marry for an underage, knowing that the minimum would be 16. But therefore, in these cases, they have to question, both parties are questioned for consentment. Very often it's happened in case of pregnancy, and they are asked before, both parties are asked before the judge to make sure in the protection of children's right. And many, and men may, can marry up to 4 wives, as I said, because polygamy is allowed. If so, he must treat them, he must treat the wives equally, or inform them in advance if the men, they may demand a divorce. And in fact, the new, while customary marriage was practiced prior to the independence in 62, marriage in Algeria is really based into the civil code. A religious ceremony may be subsequently be performed at the option of the couple. Therefore, but it's just an option for the couple, only civil marriage is recognized as legal marriage in Algeria. The 84 family code was updated and modified in 2005. Well, some articles have been updated, permitting to the, even restricting the polygamy, which becomes subject to the authorization of the first wife or the second wife or the two prior wives and confirmed by the judge. And also reviewing the status of male guardian. barring Muslim women from marrying a non-Muslim. So for example, when we look into the articles of the family code, marriage is not defined as only as a simple object of broadly present of a contract formed between men and women, but it has also, among other, a founding of a family based on affection and tranquility. So when it comes to the interfaith marriage, it's really hinders in the impact of nationality, for instance. The implementation of relevant human rights standards can be hindered on the reservation made to the CEDAW by several states, including Algeria, and mainly on the Article 2, which relates to the discrimination, eliminating discrimination against women, or Article 16, eliminating discrimination against women in all matters related to marriage and family relation. And Algeria become part of the CEDAW in 1996, and a reservation of put there some reservation to the articles, mainly the articles 9, which is related to the nationality. However, it's basically changed lifted the reservation in 2009 after the nationality code was adopted in 2005, which basically allow and grant men and women with equal rights to pass a nationality. And this law was retroactive, obviously, so allowed individuals from any foreign mother or father to pass their nationality. I will jump in now to the same-sex marriage, just to show that the same-sex marriage is absolutely not legal. It's completely illegal. And in fact, a mass conviction happened very recently. On what was described as a gay marriage in September 2020, where obviously based on the conviction of 44 people, among them the gay couple, which was basically, first of all, they were convicted for 3 years imprisonment for same-sex relation, public indecency, and subject older to harm by breaking the COVID-related quarantine measures. So the two men were sentenced for 3 years in prison and a fine, and the other guests were sentenced to 1 year, 1 year without, 1 year suspended action. So the arrest of the moral offense that involved consensual adult activities in private setting, we have to understand that this is a clear violation of a covenant on civil and political right, but also, which is Algeria part of, but also Algeria has ratified the African Charter on Human Rights and People on people's rights, which affirms the right to non-discrimination, and also has joined the African Court of Human Rights. However, the Algerian law does not extend anti-discrimination protection laws to discriminate based on sexual orientation, gender, and identity. So this the same-sex relation are punishable in penal code, and I think I will stop here and leave it for the question. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you so much, Kahina, and to all our panel. Thank you. That was most fascinating.